let me tell you that Mr. Meyer took exactly 30 minutes. The next two speakers are going to take each 15 minutes, and I'm going to see to it that they do.
I'm going to start off with an apology. Our moderator is very strict on the 15 minutes, so I'm going to have to do less than I'd like to do, but I'll try to do the best I can. What I'm interested in is considering the concept of a post-liberal society. It's been raised by almost everyone here, I think in its clearest form by Dr. Niemeyer earlier today. What does it mean to say a post-liberal society or a post-liberal America? I'm an analytical political sociologist as opposed to a policy political sociologist. All deference to Senator Buckley and to my students who ask for relevance, I deal in irrelevance. I hope, though, that it may have some relevance when I finish. Analytical sociology can't explain everything about society, and what could, but it does attempt to look at society under certain concepts that it considers important. And these are classification, structure, values, and methods. Let's take a look at these to analyze the concept of a post-liberal society. From the view of our best classification, the only possible post-liberal society is a socialist one. Our best classification is the Marxist one of feudal, liberal, and socialist. Anarchy doesn't fit in. I don't consider pure libertarianism a possibility. Socialism is a possibility in a post-liberal America. The choice, it seems to me, is between totalitarian socialism of the Marxist variety, authoritarian socialism of the radical traditional conservative variety, and welfare socialism of the modern liberal variety. Let's look at each of these concepts, though, and see what they may help us see. In terms of structure, I'd like to look at five: the family, the community, the church, the arts, and power. Structural analysis in political sociology tells us to think of differentiation in groups and to think of order and hierarchy in structures. If we do and look at these structures, I think we see an interesting split in terms of what is liberalism in a non-post-liberal society. Look at the family. We see the middle class and working class as a different kind of structural reality than the upper middle class. In terms of the structure of the community, we see a local community and a national community. In terms of the church, we see the congregation and the center. In terms of the arts, we see the commercial and the aesthetic. In terms of power, we see the representative and the rational, and that by rational, I mean essentially the bureaucracy and the executive. Now, the interesting thing about looking at these groups under these two separate headings is that we see a different structure and a different value system. We see truly, as Frank and others have said, a culture and a counterculture. The culture being the middle working, local, congregation, commercial, representative, and the counterculture the other. And this leads us into the next concept, the concept of value. The concept of values leads to the idea of ideology, and this is more in Frank's field, but let me quickly try to deal with this. Most analysts agree that the United States is still liberal in values, but because of the two different structural differentiations, I suggest that there are two liberal tendencies still in a non-post-liberal era. One can be called modern liberalism. This is the attempt to move liberalism into socialism in a moderate, slow form. Modern liberalism focuses on the single idea of engineered happiness or engineered liberalism. You can also look at some other liberalisms that focus on a single value which determines what it is. Classical liberalism focused on the single value of the economic man. Libertarian liberalism focuses on the man as free. Conservative liberalism focuses on the virtuous man. Perhaps we should call the last feudalism, but let's call it conservative liberalism. But what we're interested in essentially is modern liberalism as the representative of the counterculture, and the second that I would call traditional liberalism, which identifies the culture. Now, traditional liberalism differs from the other four in that it does not identify liberalism with one simple root. It is eclectic in essence. It identifies liberalism as symbiotic. It is a combination of virtue and liberty with both as the definition of its essence of value. Now, those of you that know Frank Meyer, I don't have to go into that any further. Let me skip to the next concept, the last concept, the concept of method or epistemology. This is my real interest. This is what I consider my real area of specialization. The question, how do you know something? How do you go about knowing something? Epistemologically, these two different liberalisms, modern liberalism and traditional liberalism, can also be distinguished in terms of their epistemologies. And indeed, all four of the other liberalisms I talked about can be distinguished from traditional liberalism in this sense. They can be distinguished on their epistemologies. The other four all have a simple epistemology in the same way that they have a simple value that they orient themselves around. And traditional liberalism has a complex epistemology as it has a complex value system. All of the others essentially rely on rationalism. And by rationalism, I mean questioning through abstraction as the only method, the only epistemology of knowing. I would suggest that the disease of liberalism is rationalism. The questioning, constant questioning, that creates in rationalism the essence and the center of a counterculture. That the questioning separates almost by nature the traditional from, separates the modern liberal from his tradition. Again, in the same way that traditional liberalism is complex in its values, it's complex in its epistemology. Traditional liberalism begins with the idea of complexity rather than the idea of simplicity that is inherent, I would maintain, in all the other liberalisms as well as socialism. It starts from the assumption of complexity. It is amazed at this kind of thing. It has been estimated that there are about 10 to the 56 power atoms in the solar system. It's also been estimated that there are more than 10 to the 56 power intercortical connections in one person's brain in 1 minute. That is, there is more social complexity in one person's mind than there is in the solar system. This idea of complexity when dealing with man overwhelms the traditional liberal. What it leads to is a rejection of the bounded circle view of knowledge. Let me try to express this as an analogy. Consider that ignorance, the totality of what can be known, is a forest with boundaries. This forest has trees in it. When you cut down the tree, you have more knowledge. Let's start at the middle of the forest and try to work out to the boundaries of the forest. Under the limited, simple idea of knowledge, as you cut down the trees and widen the area where there is no trees, you gain in knowledge. And since the boundary is definite, as you gain in knowledge, you also get rid of what you don't know. At the end of this process, you know everything when you reach the boundary of the forest. The other view is this, and try to conceptualize. I wish I had a board, a blackboard. That's the way all professors operate. Think now of this circle of the forest of ignorance with trees in it, but now take into account this idea of complexity, the complexity of the 10 to the 56th power in one person in 1 minute, multiply that by 3 billion people in the world, that's 1 minute, then multiply how many minutes in an hour, how many hours in a day, how many days in a year, how many years in a century. That gives you an idea of the kind of complexity, which I would say that you could, in realistic terms, think of that forest as having no boundary. That is, that it's infinite. Now, when you start chopping the trees down under this assumption, what happens? Yes, you gain in what you know as the trees come down, but think of the circumference of the area that you're chopping the trees down. What happens to that circumference? Your contact with what you don't know is increasing the same time that your knowledge is increasing. As one traditionalist liberal expressed it, you only, in the attempt to solve knowledge, you only get a more and more complex idea of your ignorance, a more sophisticated idea of your ignorance. This method can be called eclectic. I prefer to call it symbiotic. This method starts from this world of complexity and abstracts from it. Notice that the idea of abstraction means simplification. It means that you are not dealing with reality, but a simplification of reality, the abstraction. Therefore, you are not directly talking about reality when you're talking about abstraction. You are talking about an abstraction, not the reality. Once you have the abstraction, then you can apply logic and the other tools that we have to it, and you can deduce and reach some kind of final deduction. At this stage, you can do two things. You can either take that deduction and test it empirically through the methods of science, and then go back to the real world, or you can take the abstraction directly and go back to the real world. Now, notice what happens when you go back to that real world. You're going back to the real world either from the perspective of rationalism or empiricism with a simplification of reality, with all sorts of hedgings, all other things being equal, type 1 and type 2 error, tolerance, all of these concepts you go back to the real world with. You are going back to the real world with simplicity rather than complexity. This idea of knowledge, I suggest, is very different, and it is what distinguishes the traditional liberal from the other type of liberal. And in my opinion, this is how science operates. It does not operate how most philosophers of science say that it does. Now, what does this have to do with a post-liberal America? It suggests to me, and again, I apologize for the chopped up version of this, it suggests to me that we cannot allow simplistic epistemologies to force us to accept simplistic solutions. Obviously not the simplicity of socialism. I think we're all agreed on this. Also obviously not the simplicity, the simplification of modern liberalism. I think we're agreed on that. But also I would add not the simplicity of anarchism, nor the simplicity of conservative authoritarianism. In terms of conceptualization, an essence can be viewed symbiotically. There is no philosophical first principle. What is a philosophical first principle? There is no philosophical reason why an essence cannot be a symbiotic essence. It is the mechanical thinking of the Newtonian era that forces a simple-minded idea of an essence. An essence can be complex. It can be complex. It must be complex. A retreat from complexity and conceptualization means the end of traditional liberalism. It means that there is not traditional liberalism anymore. And this is just as true on values as it is on epistemology. And this is what I would suggest is the reason why both virtue and liberty have to be conceived as the essence of conservatism or what I would call traditional liberalism. One without the other cannot be sustained. They are both what is traditional liberalism. An acceptance or an exclusive essence, stress on the simplicity of liberty or the simplicity of virtue means the end of the liberal stage and the beginning of the socialist one in whatever variety. It is the necessity for a complexity of conceptualization. It is the necessity for a complexity of conceptualization that defines, in my opinion, epistemologically, what traditional liberalism or modern conservatism is. It also defines what traditional liberalism is as a value system. And because the conservative elite is the only thing that can bring about a conservative society, we must not end in simplicity because it means the end of traditional liberalism.